here on a very special Back on the Field with Robert Drummond, NFL, CFL, and Syracuse University alum here with Dan Tatora on our special Valentine's Day. Now, you can listen to this anytime you want, but we wanted to do something on Valentine's Day because some of you have that special someone, and some of you are going to hate everyone today that's in love, and that's fine. So we wanted to give you something special to look forward to. So even when it's not Valentine's Day, listen back to this and remember that we were there for you when that lady that broke your heart or that guy that broke your heart was not there. Rob, how you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, Dan?
Doing well. Now, what do you have? Do you have anything planned for Valentine's Day?
No, just the avoid the people out there and just relax and just let everybody enjoy themselves. But honestly, it's just one day of the year that really celebrated. But I mean, if you have love in your heart for everybody, you know, all mankind, all people, you know, it's every day is the same day, you know. So just live your day. Just be good to mankind, and just everything will be fine. This is just a special day everyone celebrates, but I celebrate today like I do every other day.
And this is a day to me that, you know, I'm blessed enough. Now I've been around a lot of crazy women, and I'm not gonna pull punches here. For all of you that were a part of my life, get ready for the sitcom that'll be coming in the future. But I always said God gave me material, and stand up, sitcom, whatever that may be. My grandmother would rather see me do, I think, stuff sitcom wise than do stand up. But I definitely have enough material. Found a good one this time around, and have been blessed enough to have every day be a day where you share love, like you said, where, you know, Valentine's Day is not the only day that you do it. But I will say, you know, there's some fun surprises. You get to do some new things, different things, and so, you know, I'm happy for Valentine's Day now, and I thank my parents for always making Valentine's Day special, because there's not a lot of good ones out there. A lot of crazy people.
A lot of crazy people. Ooh, a ton of crazy people, but you make the best of it.
Absolutely. Now, I wanted to start talking with you here because 2013 is rounding itself out, and Augustus Edwards, and we'll start here with Gus. Gus was one of those New York prospects, and the mentality by some is that you have to take care of your backyard. My mentality is you go after the best players wherever they are. They could be in Syracuse, they could be in Wyoming, wherever they may be. If you have to go out there and get them, go out there and get them. Augustus Edwards is one of those guys that was talked about over and over again. Syracuse fans wanted him here. He goes down to Miami, and now Miami pulls in Cornelius Elder, another guy who's a four-star recruit now, who comes into this team and has the opportunity to jump Augustus Edwards. And even with not knowing, you know, the situation fully, when you look at this in a broad sense, when you make a commitment to a school and you sign on the dotted line and they go out and they get someone who on paper is more talented than you, on film is more talented than you, let's say, that life has got to be difficult, because you're saying, I want to go here, and your expectation is for the next at least 3 years, I'm going to have an opportunity to put myself in a position to get in the NFL. Then you find out somebody swoops right in, and you might have lost your job before you even had a chance to get a job. And let's talk about that situation.
Yeah, that's a tough situation for a high school athlete, you know, because high school athletes coming out, they really want to put themselves in a position where, you know, they want to. It's exciting to live that limelight, you know, be on TV, play for a team like the Miami Hurricanes, they're on national TV and things of that nature, yada yada yada. But it's like, you know, it's the same thing that I told Greg Paulus. It's like, you know, you can go to Notre Dame, you know, and be a great quarterback, you know, an unbelievable quarterback, you know, and start three or four years here, or you can go to Duke, you know, and be a point guard, you know, extraordinaire for the first couple of years. But trust me, it's Duke. They're going to bring in another 6'8", you know, 240-pound point guard that can jump out of the gym, that has eyes like a cat, that can, you know, play the game, and they will put him ahead of you, because that's the type of university, that's the type of institution that, you know, that gets those stars all the time completely. So you're just a big fish in a small pond when it comes to, like, or a small fish in a big pond, I should say, when it comes to going to a school like Duke. You know what? And what happened? Truth be told, his last 2 years, they started bringing in guys who were more athletic, could jump higher, there were better players than him, you know, and he didn't play as much, you know? So with Augustus, the same thing happens. It's just like, yes, the lure of going to Miami, possibly thinking that you could possibly play, things of that nature. Now they bring in another running back who on paper, as you said before, is more talented than you, is a higher star rating. So now that's going to push you back. So now they're looking at this guy first and you secondary. You know, you can go out there and, yes, prove them wrong by going out there and working in practice, doing better and trying to do better than him, but that's a long shot. So now you have to put yourself in the best position as a college player to be happy. Yes, is he going to be happy at Miami? That may turn quick because his playing time may be diminished now with this other guy coming in. So it's just something these young athletes really, really have to think about when they sign on the dotted line to go to these schools.
You look at Syracuse and Prince Tyson Gully here and Jerome Smith here, so at least for this season. No running back comes in. If you're a guy like Augustus Edwards and you see no running back sign on the dotted line, and you know maybe I'm going to be behind Jerome Smith and behind Prince Tyson Gully, but with Adonis Amin Moore, you don't, you know, you think that you can compete with that because he hasn't been an every down back. George Morris III hasn't gotten out there. Devontae McFarland hasn't gotten out there. Ashton Broyle, they don't know where to put him. When you're in that type of situation, do you almost look back and see where you are now at Miami and then look at Syracuse and say, I would have had to wait a year. Now I potentially could be waiting 2-3 years.
Very few and far between freshmen come in and start or get a lot of playing time as freshmen in the Division I collegiate sports. You know, so it would have had a year of the growth, a year of development. Would he have made the travel team? Possibly. You know, but that's something you would have had to learn how to work hard for and accomplish. But, you know, he would have had a year of season, then going into next year knowing that there's really no star running back behind those guys, he could have been the man, you know, with a year under his belt. Whereas now he's going to a situation in Miami where there's a guy who was highly recruited, more higher than him, who's coming in. So that's the guy they're going to be pushing for. So now he's on the outside looking in to the point where they may even change his position now. So now he's in a situation where now if we got this talented guy who's ahead of you on the roster, and we think you're talented enough, why let you play a running back? Now we can move you to strong safety. We can move you to linebacker. They could have possibly brought him in for that reason because now they filled their quota, or they got the position that they wanted at that position for a younger guy, which is a running back. You know, now you're expendable. And when you become an expendable runner or expendable player in collegiate sports, that's not good.
And when you see this team and you see, you know, going back to Syracuse, the fact that Jerome Smith had to wait his turn and the fact that Prince Tyson Gully had to wait his turn, you had DeLon Carter there. And DeLon Carter in that 2010 Pinstripe Bowl, the first Pinstripe Bowl, Jerome Smith and Prince Tyson Gully didn't get a lick out there. They were watching. And it was DeLon Carter and a little bit of Antoine Bailey. But then you have Bailey, and then you start instituting Smith, and now you get Smith. So Smith has had to wait a long time. Prince Tyson Gully's had to wait longer than Smith. So the fact that they were there to see the game and there to see the players and now are where they are as a running back, even though they had to be patient, patience is paying off dividends for them. I mean, they're getting to where they need to be.
You know, patience is definitely paying off dividends, but a simple fact that even if I'm a collegiate scout or I'm a scout now for an NFL team, I'll look at these guys and be like, wow, these guys are talented, they have experience, and they're not beat up. You know, they didn't play a lot of freshmen and sophomores, and their bodies are, you know, their bodies are preserved. You know, so they can have much more prestigious NFL career because now they're not beat up from a collegiate career. And plus, their experience, and plus they understand the game. And, you know, juniors and seniors now. So they can basically step right into an NFL mold and do well. It's a tough call for a young guy because this is a lot of things that he doesn't understand and that really doesn't know, or if he doesn't have anyone to tell him, will never understand. So it's a tough call. Do I think he make the wrong choice? I mean, we'll know in 3 or 4 years. You know, we can't predict the future, but do I personally, from a level of understanding the game of football and understanding, you know, the dynamics and the way it shakes down, you know, if he doesn't go out there and prove that he's basically Barry Sanders or Adrian Peterson, he made the wrong choice because the guy ahead of him right now will stay ahead of him because he's a much more talented, much more heralded player, I should say, going into Miami.
Moving forward, in 2014, when I spoke to DeAndre Smith, running backs coach, made the statement to me that maybe you were looking at getting one in the 2014 class, but now that you didn't get any in 2013, now you have to look at getting two. Now you have to open it up a little bit more. Howard is a guy at West Genesee right here in this area of Central New York that has really started to come up. What can you say about Howard from what you know?
I've known him since he was a baby. But it's just a dynamic back, very explosive, very fast, very good hands, elusive. I mean, every intangible you want to look for in a running back, you know, he has. You know, he has a size. You know, the thing I look at him and I see his body size, his body type, it's a lot like mine. I mean, I liken myself, or I liken him to a lot like me, who coming in as a running back. You know, the tall, slender, muscular, fast, athletic type running back, a power back, but he's a lot faster once he gets in the open field. He's a lot more elusive. You know, and he can almost line up out as a wide receiver also, catch passes, you know, out as a wide receiver. You know, Howard's a very family-oriented young man. He's got his brother, he's got his mother, he's got the structure here where he played Pop Warner for Kirk Park, you know, then ended up going out to West of the Sea. So, you know, but as I say, at the end of the day, the young man has to go where he feels happy.
When we look at you and we look at you saying your heart was with Penn State, but you ended up coming to Syracuse, looking back on that in hindsight's 2020, are you happy with that decision to be part of the history of the Orange as opposed to the Nittany Lions?
Are you kidding?
took Sandusky out of it.
that's not even the aspect of it or a major concern of it for me. I mean, the thing is, and I tell these younger players and I tell people who always ask me, it's like, I'd be at practice at Manly sometimes as a freshman, an 18-year-old kid, just getting through the grind of trying to play Division I college sports, you know, just being so tired of the pains and the bumps and bruises and just dealing with just thinking if you belong or if you fit in or just trying to fit in. There'd be a lot of times I turn around and I look up, and this is in practice. I'd see my grandma, I'd see my grandfather, I'd see my aunts and uncles, I'd see my sister, I'd see my mother. Literally, I'd have anywhere between 10 to 15 people and my family members who were at practice, cheering me on in practice. You know, and that was the biggest, you know, accomplishment for me, knowing that, you know what, I'm doing something that not only, I mean, I'm trying to accomplish, but I'm making family members proud. You know, how many players can you go out there across the country and sit there and say they have family members coming to cheer them on, you know, at a football, I mean, at a practice?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here it is. I mean, at games, it was expected, but to come to practice also, they're taking the time out of their day, whether it be a half an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, to come and just give me encouragement, to just come just make me feel good, to come and just let me know that they're proud of me. That was the biggest thing for me going like in college, and I got that all 4 years. You know, so it was always inspiring for me to go out there and work as hard as I could, to do the best that I could, knowing that I had a cheering session, which was my own family sitting out there in the crowd. And if I had to do it all over again, I'd do the exact same thing. Me and Michael Owens, everyone said there was a competition between me and Michael Owens to get better. Yes, there was, you know, and that's healthy, that's wise, that's smart, you know, and that's understandable because we both wanted to be on the field. We both wanted to do our best. We both wanted to start and play. But it's like, you know, me and Michael Owens, we're the best of friends. I talked to him the other day. You know, it doesn't deter the fact that I was always there for them. He was always there for me. I always cheered him on when he was on the field. He always cheered me on when I was on the field. It wasn't a competition. It was like I was jealous of him and he was jealous of me. It was never like that. We were always there for each other because we had one common goal in mind, and that was to win football games. I made him better. I can honestly say, and I don't know if he'll say the exact same thing, he made me better.
And Prince Tyson Gully and Jerome Smith, going off of what you said about yourself and Michael Owens, these guys, for the first time this past season, had an opportunity to say, I deserve to be out there. Mm-hmm. This is my team. Mm-hmm. And Smith goes over 1,000 yards. Gully gets close, and Gully makes that game against West Virginia for the Pinstripe Bowl for 2012, makes that his game. Mm-hmm. So you look at what these two guys have done, and it seems from what they've been able to do on the field that they have had a similar relationship where Gully can appreciate what Smith does. Smith can appreciate what Gully does because they don't seem to have this. And you know that dynamic that happens in a locker room. People might not believe this factor, but you know it better than anybody, that if the locker room is not okay, right, if people are butting heads in the locker room, it doesn't matter how talented you are.
No.
And this team going forward looks like they've gotten it, that both guys understand that they're talented, mm-hmm, but neither one of them is trying to cut off the other one at the knees.
No, you don't do that. I mean, it's like me and Michael Owens, for the two years we played together, we roomed on a road game, on road games, because we had to go to a hotel and we stayed for games here, you know, also. And the reason we didn't room together as roommates during the school year, because they refused to live, because we were inseparable. they're like, no, you two are already bad enough as it is. You two aren't rooming together during the regular year. But it's like, you know, it was never a thing of that nature. Even with Daryl Johnson, you know, we always got along in the meetings and everything. I mean, when he would make a mistake, I would laugh. And I would laugh because I would say during the game, it's like, you know, I came to the sideline and be like, you know what, you talked about that guy all week long and now he got a big hit on you. Good for him. You know, next time don't talk about him. Then he would do the same with me. He would see me make a mistake and he would just sit over there and just start laughing. And then our coach just knew it was a joke. Here, these two are the best of friends, you know, and it's just a competition. But the competition just made it healthy. It's like, you know, I wanted to prove to him that I was as good as I say, and he wanted to prove to me that he was as good as he said. And I was always his biggest supporter out there, and he was always my biggest supporter. And that goes without football. You know what? Football is not life. It teaches you about life, but it's not life. There's so much more than football. You know what? The game is like, man, I've retired from the game of football. He doesn't play football anymore also. But it's like, you know what? We'll be friends for a lifetime. And that's what it's about.
Friends for a lifetime, despite the fact that you move forward out of Syracuse and he went to a team that you will never touch the star, look at the star, think about the star. How's the relationship with Moose now?
Oh, I have a great relationship with DJ. It's like, you know what? It's just... It's football, yeah. And during the game, once the whistle blows, he was my enemy, my mortal enemy. Once that whistle was over, how are you doing? You know, how's the family doing? How's your mom and dad doing? You know, how's everyone doing? You know, it's just that we're friends first. You know, you have to be able to separate as a person, not just an athlete. You know, the difference between what it is when you're doing at a job or something you love to do, as opposed to something you do where you care about somebody, you care about somebody's well-being, his family, everything of that nature. Football, I mean, for everybody, eventually you will retire from the game, you will retire from it, whatever it is you do, but the person you make friends with, the person you break bread with, the person who's been there with you, whether it be through college, whether it be through the pros, you know, will always be there for life. You know, so you have to be able to separate the two and understand the difference.
Let's go back to the team and look at Broiled and looking at talent. This is a guy who's come up, and there's a quarterback battle that's obviously brewing. Spring is right around the corner. And six guys potentially can be fighting for this job between Austin Wilson, Mitch Kimble, John Kinder, Terrell Hunt, Charlie Loeb, and Ashton Broiled, if he's put in that situation. From the talent that you've seen of him, from what you know about him, do you include him in the quarterback race, or do you look at him and say, listen, we got five guys. This guy can potentially throw the ball, can run the ball, and can catch the ball. Do I wildcat him from the get-go and just get him started there quick and fast? Or do I put him in this 6K scenario and see what he can do?
What they have to do right now is just basically interject whatever they do very, very slowly. And by that, I mean, it's like you have to take what worked in the Pinstripe Bowl, because it was devastating against West Virginia. It worked. You know, and if they want to change the offense, I understand that, but don't force feed these kids an offense that's so new to them right now. You know, implement a lot of the old stuff right now and work it in. And right now, I think Austin Burrow has to be talked about as possibly being, you know, in that starting quarterback rotation or that starting quarterback mix. Give them the opportunity, give them the chance to be able to go out there and see if he can still run that kind of style offense, because he is a threat. He's a threat no matter where he lands up on the field. You know, and that's one thing as a quarterback. You know, you look at Oregon and Chip Kelly's offense from the past few years out there at Oregon. An explosive offense. Because of why? Because the quarterback has very, very quick feet and he was able to run. When your quarterback can run and also drop back there and throw passes, it creates havoc for a defense. Because now, if he's just a pocket passer, you can just rush two, rush three, rush four, not have to worry about a quarterback running. Because even if he does run, you'll be able to make up that time and he won't be able to get a first down. But if it's a quarterback that can take off and run, someone like a Kaepernick that can turn a simple 3 or 4 yard play, that's something that Peyton Manning would get, into a 60 yard run, that's a dangerous threat on the field. And that's something you really can't factor in, but as a coach, you have to think about. So I think Broyle would be that type of player who you can put back there and give defense threats, because you know what? Now you have the game plan for him. A lot of quarterbacks you don't have the game plan for. You have the game plan for their passing, but you don't have the game plan for their running. When you have the game plan for both, that creates a problem.
Dual threat as opposed to pocket passer. We talked about it with the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And the pocket passer won, but the dual threat seems to be where a lot of teams are going. When you look at Syracuse potentially with these six quarterbacks mm-hmm. trying for the job, if Broiled is put into that mix, Broiled can run. Mm-hmm. Mitch Kimble, who's coming in as a freshman, is said to be able to do both. And so what he can do on the college level is yet to be seen, but he'll have that opportunity to come in and show himself. Terrell Hunt is a dual-threat guy. John Kinder is a dual-threat guy. When you look at that out of the six, and you have Charlie Loeb and Austin Wilson, which potentially are more of those pocket passers mm-hmm. for you, moving forward with the way the football is going, even though Loeb has had the most time there, and yeah, Wilson's coming in as a freshman, do they kind of step behind in your mind because these other four guys can do both?
I don't think they step behind. As I said before, I mean, it depends on the offense they run. You know, right now it's just still up in the air because the offense coordinator left. You know, so we have to see what kind of offense they're trying to implement and what their style of offense is going to be. So until I understand that, or until I know that, and try to see that, it's hard for me to sit here and speculate. I can speculate on a lot of things. If we're going to go the same drop back passing offense, go with more wide receiver set, I'd say, yeah, keep Loeb in there. But if we're going to go with a more dual set, more wildcat set, more wide open, more up-tempo game, I'd say go with Broyle. So it depends to be seen.
Before we go for today, we've opened a lot of doors, as we always do, so you've given me something to talk to you about for the weeks to come. But looking right now, we're going to switch and go off the field, and we'll go to the court for the first time for us here, to get your thoughts on this Syracuse team and knee-jerk reaction defining Syracuse as their men's basketball program. What's their definition to you?
Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, it's the best definition I can say. You know, when they show up to play and their mind is clear and there's no controversy and there's no anything, you know, they go out there and just have fun and play basketball.
Yeah.
But when they're worried about, you know, I hear the rumors that, you know, about Mike Hopkins. I hear rumors about, you know Sutherland possibly, you know, going the same thing, Fab Miller, where they brought him back and now the NCAA is going to take him out for the tournament. I mean, I heard things as far as Michael Carter-Williams, you know, who's made scholar athlete 2 weeks in a row, you know, in month of, I think, January, and it's like all of a sudden now he's going to be academically ineligible. I'm like, you know, you don't know what to believe. You don't want them. And you know what? And the thing is, though, those young men read papers also, you know, so do the coaches. So it's got to frustrate them. It's a game last night. They just came out flat. You know, they came out flat against a team that was basically playing for nothing. And at that point, Syracuse should have just flexed their power and just went out there and just beat a team. You know, you beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And I was telling a friend last night after watching the game, it's like, you know what? A lot from the Big East tournament is going to tell how far this team is going to go. If they go out there in the Big East tournament, you know, just play relaxed and just play like the world, weight of the world is off their shoulder, they'll be fine. If they go out there and they look flat, they look like they're more concerned with things that are off the field than on the court, they're going to be in trouble.
This team has only lost 4 games this season out of 24. Mm-hmm. However, every single one of those 4 games is on the road. Mm-hmm. What does that say to you?
They're a bad road team. You know, it just says that they have to get their mentality, they have to get their mind right. You know, when they can play at the Carrier Dome, it's easy to play in front of 20,000, 30,000 fans. You know, those fans get you hyped up, they get you excited. But when you're on the road, you have to find that same excitement mentally, be able to and gain the advantage from what it is you feel when you felt the dome on the road, you know, and that comes with experience. And right now, it's a younger group of guys. Granted, they're some of them are sophomores and juniors, but they have to find that fire inside of them, what it takes to get to do the same things that they do home on the road.
Jump shots are important.
Yes.
Kansas can do it. Teams like Florida can do it. Teams like Duke, obviously, can do it. Your North Carolinas can do it. Miami has shown up to be doing a lot themselves.
Here, my Cinderella. Oof.
And being ranked 3rd in the country right now, so how the hell did that happen? They just swooped right in there, took over, and now the ACC looking up at Miami for the first time since Miami went to the ACC.
Yeah, Miami's going to surprise a lot. If you get your brackets, if you don't have Miami going to the Final Four, the final game, your bracket's not going far. They're the most athletic team in the country right now.
A spoiler alert right there from Drummond, what type of bracket he'll have. But looking at all of these teams that can shoot the ball, Syracuse up against UConn, 4-for-9 James Sutherland from beyond the arc. The rest of the team 0-for-14. Worst night they've had as far as a team from 3-point range, but not completely out of the scope or the realm of reality for them and how they shoot. Jump shots, teams will let Syracuse take all day long because more often than not, outside of your James Sutherland or your C.J. Fair or Trish at times, the ball's not going to go in the basket in Syracuse's favor. What can you do this late in the game, sitting here in February with March around the corner, on a team that really isn't trained to be a jump shooting threat?
If I were a coach, which I'm not, and I'm not a basketball player myself, but just the dynamics and just looking at body language, motion, and everything, I, as a coach, would tell C.J. Fair, I said, you have a green light to be as aggressive as hell. And I tell Brandon Trish just to be more of a leader. Not that he hasn't been doing enough, but Brandon Trish has to step up right now because he's a senior. He's the one that, you know what, stop putting everything on Michael Carter-Williams because he's a point guard. You're the two guard, doesn't matter. You can still be a leader as a two guard. Look at LeBron James. You know, and I would love to see C.J. Fair just become a lot more aggressive. Because when he's aggressive, that team plays entirely differently. They truly, truly do. You know, and he's the type of player, the caliber player, and I can compare him almost to a Deion Waiters. You know, just step up, young man. Just be more aggressive. Just be that type of player. You know what? If you make a mistake, that's okay. I can handle him going in there, being aggressive, making a mistake, than I can him just being soft, you know, and just not attempting, you know, and getting nothing done. So those would be my intangibles for them going forward and what they need to do. Michael Carter-Williams just needs to take a step back and just keep doing the things he's doing. Distribute the ball. It's going to come to you. Stop forcing things. You know what? And don't beat yourself up when you make a mistake. You know, don't second-guess yourself. Because right now, the youth in Michael Carter Williams is starting to come out after this long season right now. But you know what? Just to tell him to relax. And that's what it takes someone like a Brandon Trish to come over here and tell him, say, you know, calm down. This time, you're the point guard, but I'll bring the ball. I'll get everything set up and everything. You know, just relax him. And that's where senior leadership comes in. Just be more aggressive, prepare. You know, and for Brandon, you know, just be more of a senior leader right now. Just Michael Carter Williams, just relax.
And Michael Carter Williams, what he does not have in common with Brandon Trish, Deion Waiters, and Scoop Jardine is that Boeheim has gone over to him and not yelled, not gotten
in his
verbally
face.
In his face to and not saying that yelling or screaming at him is the right thing, but saying it in the sense of when Scoop made a mistake,
it's all over.
Even if he was starting at point guard, he would come sit by Boeheim, he'd be on the bench. Brandon Trish, on the bench. Deion Waiters, on the bench. Michael Carter Williams, leave him out till he fouls out.
Yeah.
That, to me, has created the monster, so to speak.
It's created a sense of entitlement, a sense of complacency, a sense of, I can do no wrong, and you're absolutely correct. You know, it's just, and from kids I know who I trained and hang out on the hill, it's given Michael Carter Williams a bigger head. Knowing he can basically go out there and just do whatever he wants and, you know, and not held accountable. That's something Boeheim's going to have to deal with. I mean, after 30-plus years of coaching, you know, you can't second-guess what Jimmy does. You know, you can, but he knows what he's doing. So it's something that's going to be left to be seen. The tournament's coming up quick, and I hope they correct whatever it is they're doing. I hope whatever he's doing sinks in real fast.
We talked about him rushing. The youth is showing.
Mm-hmm.
Coming down, and one play stayed in my mind against UConn is a play where Syracuse had fought for the rebound, didn't get the rebound. Then it bounces off the backboard hard. Brandon Trish gets it at the free throw line. Quick outlet pass to Michael Carter-Williams, who comes down, and I'm thinking in my brain, I know Michael. Michael's going to the basket.
Mm-hmm.
He held up for a second. Looked like he was letting his teammates come down. And as soon as a couple of guys started to come down, went up with a defender on him, between him and the basket, had the ball on his right side, turned and threw the ball up without having his body completely turned toward the basket in a last-ditch heave with more than a minute to go,
mm-hmm.
which looks like a shot you would take if you're trying to tie the game with 2 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
Those types of shots, the sporadic jumping up in the air and after he's up doesn't know what he wanted to do with the ball, am I passing, am I shooting, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
These are youthful mistakes, and I'm not going out there and saying Michael Carter-Williams is a bad player. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is Michael Carter-Williams is too young in his game to be what people have told him he was.
And that's where Brandon Trish comes in. The senior who can take the ball out of his hand, who's a very good dribbler, who can bring the ball up as a point guard. He can be a point forward, a point shooting guard, you know, and just say, just Michael, just relax. Give the young man time to relax, you know. Let him know, like, you know, it's not only about you. You know, it's about the rest of the team. It's a team game also. You know, I know all the limelight's on you. I know that you know, the wooden award, blah, 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 whatever. He's like, stop reading the press clippings, young man. He's like, no, okay, we got this. I'll bring the ball up. I'll take everything off you. Now let's go into our offense. That's where senior leadership comes in, and that's why I said that.
And Brandon Trish has said before this season that he fully expected Michael Carter-Williams' numbers to go down once they started playing more talented teams, and that he would bring the ball up because he felt like he would need to do that to take that leadership. The thing with Brandon, and I respect Brandon's game, and for people, every time Syracuse loses, the direction, the spotlight is always pointed on him. But if you look at the numbers, and yes, against UConn, he didn't have a good shooting night and only had 9 points, but the numbers don't lie in the sense that C.J. Fair and Brandon Trish have been the most consistent double-digit scoring players on the team
Yes. The
entire season.
Yes.
What I challenge Brandon to do is to understand that there are 7 games left mm-hmm. in the regular season. The Big East tournament is as many games as you push your team
Yes. Toward,
and the NCAA tournament is as many rounds as you can
mm-hmm.
continue to move through and live in that type of competition. He doesn't have anything after this.
No.
So, and I'm not saying he doesn't have NBA or an opportunity to play overseas. What I'm saying is Syracuse is done after this season.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that leadership has to come now,
or
it's never going to come.
That's why I said that. I see it. I mean, as a former athlete, as a personal trainer now, I see it. It's like, it's time for Brandon Trish now just to take over. You know, and that's not being cocky. It's not being conceited. It's not being, it's like, you know, it's time for that young man to take over, you know, and lead a team from a senior leadership. And from, he understands the game. He's a high basketball IQ. He understands what's going on. He sees what's going on. Take over.
Can he take over with Michael Carter-Williams?
Yes.
Thinking the way that he's thinking?
Yes, he can. Take the ball out of his hands. You bring it up now. You know, and once you get up to the top of the field, because Michael Carter-Williams, as he's driven the ball up from the inbounds to where he dribbles it up and starts setting a play, he's thinking a whole lot of different things. Brandon takes the ball from the inbound to where he dribbles it up. Now they get their set. Now Michael Carter-Williams can only think about the play and the set. He can't think about all the other things that are going on. So it makes a huge difference. Those 3 to 4 to 5 seconds makes a huge difference in athletics.
And I think that a big thing with him is the fact that he was on the bench last season. There were games where he didn't play, and he was behind Scoop Jardine, Brandon Trish, and Deion Waiters. You ask a man in a step five program to go from step one to five without 2, 3, and 4, which I've talked about before, and in being in that situation, I think what needs to come as understanding to Michael Carter-Williams is you have not learned or experienced enough to go from step one to five.
Right.
Now, they don't have the guard depth to say to Michael, you're going to stay on the bench and wait your turn. But at the same time, I think what he has to understand is this middle ground is what he's learning as he's playing, and Trish has already been there.
That middle ground is what will get you to the next level, and he has to learn that.
Right here with Rob Drummond, as always, back on the field. And we went to the court today. And a happy Valentine's Day to everyone out there. And a happy every day to everyone. And if you don't have that special someone, that's all right. Because there'll be plenty of stories and plenty of things to come out that will never, never give you a dull moment. And I'm sure Rob has some of his own.
Just enjoy the day. Stay safe, everyone.
So, and by he has some of his own, I mean that he will not tell them on the record. Have a great day, folks. We'll talk to you very soon here on Back on the Field on WakeUpCallDT.com, the only place to catch your sports with Rob Drummond. Once again, I'm Dan Satora. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.